Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, dear friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, and you might notice that your ears are being massaged by a new, silky, deep, resonant, sweet sound, and that's because I'm recording from my upgraded podcast studio. I've leveled up my podcast studio. I'm not done yet, but I've got soundproof foam all over the walls, and soon I'll have a nice sound dampening carpet placed underneath the podcast table. I'm currently having it washed at the laundromat because my dog pissed so much on it. So much piss was in that carpet that when I took it to the laundromat, they said that they were going to have to send it to a special facility somewhere up north because in his entire life of working at a laundromat, he had never seen a carpet so soaked in Chihuahua piss. And this is a guy who works at a laundromat in Los Angeles, and he sees Chihuahua piss soaked items every single day, from t-shirts to ski masks to carpets. And he said he's never seen anything like it. He said that the odor of that carpet reminded him of the time that he had gotten into this car accident and died for 15 minutes. He'd had no brain activity, and his heart had stopped beating. And he said that during that time, he was sucked down a glowing tunnel into a sort of hive space deep beneath the earth, a kind of mazy, honeycombed place, and that he had been dropped by a praying mantis scorpion creature onto a flat sheet of sticky, gooey stuff that the creature had hissed to him was made of Chihuahua piss or demonic Chihuahua piss. And he said that during this time that he was dead medically, he experienced over 7,000 years of being pissed on by a giant Chihuahua that every morning would come into this specific part of the hive and spray piss into his mouth and face and all over his clothes, and he tried to move, but he couldn't because he was stuck on that thick gel that was also made of Chihuahua piss. And he said for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, he breathed and tasted and felt nothing but the varieties of Chihuahua piss that were being sprayed down upon him by demons. And he woke screaming. They used the defibrillator, woke him back up. He's fine, but he said to me that even there in that hell space, he had never experienced such a pungent reek of Chihuahua urine. So I'm having to get the thing processed in a facility up north. And once that's done, the sound will become even more dampened. The goal being that this podcast room becomes a conduit to extra dimensional forces that can move through me and my guests. And the only way that that can happen is through soundproof foam and making the room look like what would happen if DARPA had a seance chamber somewhere on the in the sub-basement. That's what I'm going for here, I think. I mean, I don't want it to be dark and creepy necessarily. I want it to be focused and supernatural. But I guess that's creepy for some people. But I also don't want it to be that kind of corporate. I don't know if you guys have seen pictures of some podcast studios. They just look like radio booths or something, which is fine, whatever. But I would like my podcast studio to look like a place where maybe you would find yourself if you'd been abducted by aliens, or maybe a place that you would go to in the very first few milliseconds of a DMT trip before your pineal gland exploded and you found yourself drifting into that super hyper-dimensional place that Terrence McKenna loved talking about so much. Somewhere there, like a kind of pre-Bardo intermediary place. But Right now, it's just a bunch of foam on the wall. I'm going to keep working on it, though. And I'm eventually, and I know I've been saying this forever, but I am going to add cameras to this podcast studio and figure out a way to broadcast this on as a Google Hangout, probably, because they have some new function my friend was telling me about where they could actually, you can stream in the same way that you can stream Ustream. You can stream right to YouTube, and people can, I don't know, sign up to join like certain, I don't understand the whole thing. My dear friend Noah told me about all that stuff. And also, if you've ever gone to Google Hangouts, it's cool because you can make your face look like a cat, and you can make your background look like the ocean. And everybody knows that that's a component that definitely makes a great podcast. So I'm going to be doing that. That's going to be happening. And somewhere in the future, and this is a big call to all of you VR people out there, somewhere in the future, I'd like to figure out how to use an Xbox Kinect to scan the room and put it in some kind of virtual space where people can go and watch the studio. I've talked about that before, and some wonderful human beings are working on that very thing right now. I hope that they're making great progress in that direction, because my ultimate dream is to be able to scan the room that I'm in right now and in real time translate it into digital space so that listeners can enjoy the podcast, not just by watching it on YouTube in two dimensions, but by experiencing it in virtual space in three dimensions. And I'm sure that that's eventually where all podcasts are going to go, and all shows and everything eventually is going to be sucked in to those weird portals, which are inside our phones that we currently call cameras. We're all going to get digitized, reproduced in some kind of virtual land. And I would like to be one of the people helping that happen. Speaking of that stuff, are there any designers out there? Because I have an idea for a virtual reality thing for the new Oculus Rift that I need somebody to help me make. And I don't know who I'd go to for that. But I need a really good designer. I need somebody who knows how to work in, I guess, with the Unreal Engine or it's not like a game. It's kind of a game, but it's not a game. But it's a really, really cool experience that, you know what, fuck it. Why am I being secretive about this? I'm just going to put it out there. Here's what I want to make. And I would so love it if somebody out there would help me create this. Here's what I'm looking for. I want to make a virtual crucifixion experience. And basically what it is you put on the Oculus Rift and you are suddenly Jesus being crucified on the cross. It's the POV of Christ being crucified. I want it to be as historically accurate as possible. So I want the people who are watching Christ being crucified, I want them to be dressed in exactly the right way. I don't want it to be zany. I don't want it to be psychedelic. We've got to start with a base of realism. And based on that time period and based on the various scriptures that talk about this crucifixion, I would want it to be exactly right. No tongue-in-cheek, no irony, no poking fun at Christians, none of that stuff. I want it to be an exact and identical POV experience of what it was like for our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, to be crucified on that terrible place, the place of skulls, Golgotha, with the thieves on either side of him and Roman soldier with a spear and the disciples watching and weeping and Mary and Mary Magdalene and everybody freaking out. And the only options that you have in this initial build of this experience are the options of whatever Jesus did. So we all know that Christ, as he was being crucified, said a few wonderful, poignant, beautiful, mind-bending things. One of them, one of my favorite being, as he looked out over these asshole, fundamentalist, lunatic, backwards, desert idiots who had just scourged him and nailed him to a cross where he was slowly suffocating to death while he died of thirst, he looked out and he said,
"Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing."
Which is pretty much it's kind of like the ultimate alien insult. It's what an alien would do if he came to it. It's a nice way of saying there's not intelligent life on this planet, so there's really no point in attacking them or doing anything with them. They don't know what they're doing. That's a cynical way of looking at it. Another less cynical way of looking at it is that he recognized that most human beings are in a kind of sleepwalking state of just numb emptiness where they're only thinking about the past or the future and kind of violent to the people around them, not because they have some innate desire to cause pain or harm in the world, but just because they're completely asleep, and sleepwalkers will knock shit over, and God forbid if a sleepwalker was driving, he would inevitably wreck his car into a children's hospital, and sleepwalkers are always hurting themselves too. So a more optimistic POV is that he was saying, forgive them. They're essentially innocent. They haven't developed their neocortex enough to recognize that they are existing in a kind of super paradise where anything that they want and believe can instantly happen. All they have to do is ask for it and connect with a source of light and beauty that exists in all things. Anyway, he said a few very poignant, cool things that you can interpret in whatever way that you want. The final thing Christ said when he was about to die.
Father, forgive them.
No, wait, that's not the final thing. The final thing he said was,
into your hands I commend my spirit.
Actually, that was not the final thing Christ said. The final thing Christ said was,
it is finished.
So, whenever you end the Christ simulator, that is the final thing that you would say. Whenever you exit the program, you, as Jesus, would say,
it is finished.
So there it is, $1 million idea, probably $1 billion idea, that I'm just putting out there on the internet for any of you technological entrepreneurs out there to create what will be known as the ultimate religious experience. You, whoever you are out there who knows how to do this, whatever startup you are, wherever you are, you recognize that this idea is going to make you as wealthy as Bill Gates. I'm sure that a Christ simulator would become as popular as the Bible eventually. Everybody would want one of these. Everybody wants to know what it's like to be crucified. Every Christian loves thinking about Jesus being crucified, and even non-Christians like thinking about Jesus being crucified. If you've ever seen The Passion of the Christ, one of the most popular bondage porn movies ever released in the history of America, you know that there's something incredibly hot about watching a waifish Christ being with inexplicable abdominal muscles getting the shit whipped out of him by muscular dudes dressed like Romans. Everybody loved that. And the Christians, when they watch it, they get to imagine that the reason they love it is because they're experiencing the suffering of their Lord and Savior. And everybody else who's on dates with Christians gets to enjoy the kind of incredible sexual bloodbath as Jesus is essentially just a blood dispenser mechanism at the end of that movie. He's just spraying blood every 4 seconds, gouts and sprays of delicious, wonderful, sweet-tasting Christ blood landing on the guards' faces and whips and weird scourging devices. That could be another program. Somebody else could develop the torture of the Christ virtual reality experience. But this, we got to start with the crucifixion of Jesus, the VR experience. We can call it iChrist or VR Christ. What, you'll come up with a great name for it. It needs to be hyper-realistic, and it needs to be historically accurate. That's the build. That's the initial build. Then you make it open source so that other people can modify it. So that's where it gets fun, where if people want to do, you know, if people want to change the characters, they can. So, for example, if you want to experience what it might be like to be Jesus Christ being crucified by cats, then all the people sitting around the cross will be stray cats, Persian cats, fancy cats, bald cats, dressed as Roman soldiers and dressed as the disciples. If you want to experience what it's like to be Jesus Christ being crucified by George W. Bush's, where it's just all George W. Bush sitting and watching you get crucified, that's a potential upgrade. Really, it's anything that you could think of. I can think of a lot of stuff like cheat codes that you could put in that would turn your crucifix into a kind of airplane. So it launches out of the ground, and then you can fly around the Golgotha, where Jesus was crucified. You can fly around that on the cross, shooting lasers down at the Roman guards and exploding them if you wanted to. And of course, there's all kinds of other things that you could do. If technology gets to the point where we can scan our faces in, then you could actually have the face of Jesus Christ. Oh, before I forget, this is another facet of the crucifixion simulator. You can also jump into the POV of all the people watching you be crucified. So you don't just have to experience what it's like to be Jesus being crucified. You could be the Roman guard that stabbed Jesus in the side with a spear. And as many of you know, that spear became known as the Spear of Destiny. And that is the spear that the Nazis actually were looking for, because they were trying to collect religious artifacts, because Hitler was so amped up on methamphetamine by the end of it that he got it into his head that if he could get the Ark of the Covenant and all the various religious artifacts that were scattered throughout the world, he could actually win the war. And you could experience what it's like to be Mary Magdalene, or you could experience what it's like to be, like a demonic crow somewhere off in the horizon, or whatever it is. You could see this thing is limitless, and it appeals to adults and children, monks and Satanists. So everyone's going to want to take part in the crucifixion of Jesus. Maybe you don't want to experience what it's like to be Christ. Maybe you want to be the asshole guard that when he said, "I am thirsty," the asshole who put vinegar in a sponge and shoved it into his mouth. Maybe you could be that guy if you just want to torture Christ. You know, you get to pick. That's part of the fun of this simulator, you know? And as it grows and we get to the scourging, where you can experience Jesus being scourged, or where we get to the part where you're like carrying the crucifix through the street, you can pick. Do you want to be Jesus, or do you want to be the person who tortures Jesus? And obviously, that's a choice that we all must make every single day of our lives as we walk out into the world and decide, am I going to be the person who takes the suffering of the world today, or am I going to be shoving sponges filled with vinegar into the mouth of every single asshole I come across in this shit world that I happen to have been launched out of a pussy into? You get to pick. You get to choose love or death. This game is a kind of training session for that. And aside from all the metaphorical implications of the game, it's just going to be fun to see the reaction people might have to this, because Christians, the fundamentalist Fred Phelps, bigoted, homophobic assholes, they're not going to understand if they should be offended by the game or if they should love the game, which is why the initial build has got to be historically accurate. That's all I ask, whoever you are out there who's going to make this wonderful game. Also, I say team up. Don't just do it on your own. Go to my message board about this game. Start a thread. Get people involved. Do whatever you need to do to get the funds together to make this amazing game. There's not much I'm going to be able to do to help you, but you're welcome to contact me and communicate with me about making the game. I feel like I let down the people who are working on the Podrift project that I mentioned, only because there's not much I could offer after the initial idea. So I would love to like go back and forth with a group of people who are really interested in building this thing, but I leave most of it to you. Into your hands, I commend my spirit. Make this game. I just want to know what it would be like to be crucified as the Son of God. That's it. Something I've always wondered. And in the history of human existence, as far as I'm aware, outside of people who have actually been crucified, no one, except for people who participate in those weird religious ceremonies where they tie themselves to a cross, but as far as I'm aware, there is no digital Christ experience. It doesn't exist. Supply and demand, people. Supply and demand. There is a demand for a virtual reality crucifixion game. A huge demand. Everybody wants it. Why it hasn't been made yet, I have no idea. Doesn't make sense. How can there be a game where you run through a world eating mushrooms and jumping into sewer pipes when there isn't a game where you get to experience being the immortal child of an omnipotent love force who is getting slowly murdered by a bunch of monkey descendants? That's a great game. Make it happen, please. I beg you. Thank you, God. Thank you, Jesus. And thank you, all of my sweet, sweet listeners out there who are going to get started on this project. Let's do it quick. I'd like to see the beta phase of this within the next 2 months. There's your deadline. I don't know what I could offer you in exchange outside of, you know what? If somebody makes this game, if somebody out there or a team of people out there make this game, and I don't mean like a low-res crap version. I mean, if somebody really makes a photorealistic, historically accurate, beautiful simulation of the crucifixion of Jesus that is fully modifiable and open source so that anybody who wants to transform any component in the scene can transform any component in the scene. You want Jesus to be Nancy Grace? Bam! Nancy Grace is being crucified. These are all mods that somebody could make. If you make that, then I will have you on the podcast. I will tweet the holy shit out of it, and I'll send you and your team a bunch of t-shirts and posters. I don't know. Is that enough? Do you have to be compensated for this? Don't you feel in your heart that at this very moment, God is telling you that your entire life as a software developer, your entire life training and learning code and learning how to make things in three-dimensional space was all just you preparing to do the work of God? And what God is telling me at this very moment is that God wants a virtual reality Oculus Rift Christ simulator to exist in this dimension.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by Quince. You know, when people like want to support the podcast, they send whatever it is that they have. And sometimes you have to say no because it blows. And I'm a skeptical, cynical guy. Look, I don't know how to deal with the cosmic predicament of being a human being existing in an infinite void. And sometimes I veer towards nihilism. So I generally have a low expectation. My wife loves Quince. That didn't change my expectation until I slid on a pair of Quince's Flowknit performance joggers. Let me tell you something, man. I don't generally like wearing sweatpants. I don't generally like this stuff. I'm a never nude. I've mentioned that many times, and I'll just walk around with jeans on. I know that's crazy. But I love these. They're my go-to when I'm going on the road. This is what I sleep in. Very soft. Very nice. And everybody knows about my incredibly sensitive bottom. I have a sensitive bottom syndrome. So that means that I chafe. And Quince, these pants are great, is what I'm saying. I wouldn't recommend them if I didn't love them. My wife loves them. I mean, not the same pants. We don't share sweatpants, but she loves Quince. Quince has all the things you actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants that work for everything from backyard hangs to nice dinners. This is the best part. Everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middleman, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy markups. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices, premium fabrics, and finishes. Elevate your closet with Quince. Go to quince.com/Duncan for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Duncan to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Duncan. Today's podcast guest is about to go on tour with me this week. He is an actor, a comedian. He's almost a prepper, but he's not. When I say prepper, I just mean he knows how to garden. He's a wonderful human being and one of my dear friends who has a fantastic podcast called Twisting the Wind. Everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, God's favorite child, Johnny Pemberton.
My nipples are all again. There's only one way out of this mess.
It's through my chest.
Double nipples, double breasts.
You'll never guess.
Death.
She opened up a nipple. There was an escalator. I didn't want to complain, but I prefer an elevator.
Welcome to the nipple.
You'll never last.
You must fly into the nipple. Well, that was beautiful. That was kind of like the Grateful Dead, the space.
Yeah, or maybe like a Pink Floyd album.
Yeah, that was incredible. That's so fun.
Like Uma Guma, maybe, or one of those early ones, Piper at the Gates of Dawn.
Oh, those are so good.
Metal.
Those are so good.
Metal's a great one. You ever heard my old joke when I first started doing stand-up about Pink Floyd fans?
No. Let's hear it.
Okay. Hey, dude, I know you don't like Floyd, but have you heard metal? Dude, you got to check out Uma Guma. Dude, seriously, come over. I've got quadraphonic sound. I'll suck your dick, dude. Seriously. I'll suck your dick, dude. I got 4 CD players. We'll put on Piper at the Gates of Dawn, quadraphonic at the same time Uma Guma plays with Relics in the background. Ooh. Dude, I'll suck your dick. It'll be so sweet.
Let me tell you something, man.
That was sort of the joke.
I would do anything, outside of paying for it, to have Marc Maron's sound system. That motherfucker. That's
really?
My first experience with, like, you know, an audio. He's an audiophile.
Yeah, he
so
is.
So, like, when you listen to
he's
records.
He's a white audiophile.
When you listen to records pouring out of whatever weird Tesla level, falling out of a spaceship, vacuum tubes running into Tibetan skulls that kind of, like, curl around and go out of a heart pump or whatever he's got running
through a Bose mobile battery speaker.
Yeah, it feels like you could eat the music.
Yeah, it's totally different. My dad used to be a huge audiophile, and the guys who work at those high-end audio stores, they're really weird. They're all really weird.
What do you think? Do you think it's driving them mad? Like their passion is driving them crazy?
Well, it's like they're going crazy because it's this pursuit of perfection that's kind of unattainable. To the point where you're like, oh, I'm spending $10,000 for a pump to make sure that my turntable is levitating properly on all sides. So
yeah.
Like, I've got some sort of a special plasma balance on my Thorin's table so it doesn't get interrupted when there's a sunspot. So I can listen to fucking a mono copy of Jeff Beck's first album on my...
Well, it's kind of like a time machine, isn't it? Isn't that kind of what
recorded music?
You know... A friend of mine has this incredible song about how a tape recorder is a time machine. It's beautiful,
it is.
It's true, and it's like they're trying to, like, as much as they can, zoom in or tune in to that moment in time when whatever they're listening to is recorded to almost bring it to life. Whereas when you listen to other regular sound systems, what we all listen to, it's cool, but it's still massively distorted. You're not getting the real taste of what it
distorted,
is.
Distorted, and it just doesn't have the same amount of... The amount of information conveyed is just tiny. There's not much information.
You're something of a music expert, aren't you?
Yes.
You really are. Like, we were just... Who was I talking? Oh, yeah. I was playing that beautiful jazz album that you got
Which
me.
Which one?
The Something Tear.
Oh, the Inflated Tear.
The Inflated Tear.
I see you're caring for your records.
Oh, God. I knew you were... right after I brought it up, I knew you were going to look over at my stack of records on top of each other and just get mad. I almost wish I didn't mention it, but
yeah.
Having a friend like you is really important because it's so nice to have someone who's dipping their fingers into all that weird music that's floating out there and bringing it back and showing it to you. Because otherwise, I never would have heard that before.
That
What's his name?
Rashawn Rollenkirk.
And he's blind.
He's blind, yeah. He used to do a lot of acid, too.
Rashawn Rollenkirk.
Rashawn Rollenkirk. Yeah, he has a lot of his songs are about what he dreams about or what his, like, hallucinations are. If you're blind, it's obviously a lot different when you're hallucinating because the experience is totally different.
Yeah, there was a thread on Reddit where they were asking blind people what's it like to hallucinate.
Yeah.
And... They were saying they could see, some of them could see colors.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of think it's got to be like meditating, right? Because when you meditate, you I see all kinds of stuff. I see crazy stuff.
And like,
I
feel like what?
I see a lot of like geometric stuff. Lately, when I've been meditating, I think about like shapes, and I'm able to like basically draw things in my head, and I can sometimes draw them afterwards. But sometimes, a lot of times, it's three-dimensional things that are moving, like a it's kind of hard to explain. Like maybe like a something like from Fantasia or something, where it's things that are moving and weird animated geometric patterns and stuff.
What do you think that is?
I don't know what it is. It's got to be just the brain moving. It's just maybe it's a physical expression of thought or something. I don't really know what it is.
You know that Elliott Smith lyric that goes, I'm not clearly not a great singer anymore. I used to be. I had quite a career as a singer when in my teens.
You had that accident.
Yeah. He's got that great lyric that goes, I see colored bars when I come.
You ever he heard does? That?
Yeah.
No, I haven't heard
it's
that.
It's so cool, man. But it's like,
I see colored bars when I come.
Yeah. But it's like, have you ever had that thing happen when you're tripping and you have an orgasm, or you're just tripping and you don't have an orgasm, but you close your eyes and you see these very specific,
very detailed shapes. Right,
like that seem more than just like a random thing that your brain's spitting out, but like it seems like you're looking at a language that you just don't know. Or...
Yeah, sometimes I see some like I see an absolute color, and I'm seeing that color for the. I feel like I'm seeing it for the first time, or seeing it for the not for the first time, but the first time I'm actually like, oh, I understand it. Like I got the information download from that.
What
thing.
Do you mean an absolute color?
Like I see something. It's like I see it the whole thing purely. It's and it's absolute. I guess the best way to liken it is, you know how you can listen to a song like 50 times, right? You can listen to it.
Yes.
But there's one time when you actually when you really hear it, really, yes. It really like hits home because there's something about the oh, I get this now. I kind of yeah. I'm hearing the thing that was trying to be conveyed.
Yes.
In that, I feel like that's maybe what happens sometimes is in those experiences. You kind of understand it, but you don't understand it in terms of. Being able to describe it to ascribe anything to it, you just understand it, you just know.
Gnosis.
It's like a thing, you just all of a sudden, you just know something.
So this is the Platonic ideal you're talking about. Like sometimes you witness the eternal form that all forms are based on. Is that what you're saying?
It's like you feel it, man.
Yeah.
You just feel it.
Yeah, right. And that's a great way to put it. You feel it. Because like so often... You think that you've gotten tired of a certain song or some kind of music, and then you do hear it in just the right setting and just the right mood, and suddenly you realize that it wasn't that you got tired of the song, but rather that you just didn't have the ability to open your heart up to what level that song was functioning at.
Totally.
When that shit happens, it's a spike into your heart.
It's a blast.
It's a blast.
It's a fucking...
Because when people record music, I don't think that they're just... I think that somehow in the future they're going to figure this out. But in those strings of ones and zeros that a song is transformed into when it's in its intermediary state between being played and going into your ears, mm-hmm. in those ones and zeros, somehow there is captured emotion or feeling.
Yeah.
It's capturing, it's a kind of digitized telepathy transmitting the emotional state of the singer and the performer into your mind, not mm-hmm. just the music.
Well, that's what I think is going to be the next state of audio, because right now we're kind of hitting a wall with how we listen to music. There'll have to be some sort of... I've been thinking about this for many years, and it doesn't totally make sense to me what it would be, but there has to be some sort of a next level of listening to where when you're listening to it, there's a new level of experience in the sound, not just through your ears. It has to be something that's like another sense. Maybe it's like a combination of your senses, but some other way you're experiencing it that's not just hearing it.
You made me think of like this right when you were saying that. I imagine this, some futuristic music listening room, right? Lying on the floor of this room with wires coming out of it is a thing that looks like a sarcophagus. It's filled with a kind of nano particulate, a
like
kind
pudding.
Of a pudding, yeah, like a
gel pudding.
And you lay down in the gel.
There you go. That's it.
And then when you're laying in the gel, the music at the quantum level is affecting every one of these nanoparticles, so that the waves of the music are sort of rolling up and down your body. And of course, the gel is breathable. It's uh-huh. It's that shit from the abyss.
It's
remember
massage
that?
Gel.
Yeah, it's breathable massage gel. Yeah. We need
some
that.
Special breathable, what's that shit called? This Nuru massage gel.
There's so many, you know, there's like so many boundaries that separate us from truly enjoying our lives that science just hasn't delivered yet. And one of those things is breathable massage gel.
That's very expensive and has like emits a certain color of light.
And it just responds. It can like, you lay in this stuff and there's pre-programmed undulations of the gel based on whatever it is that you want to experience. It's music, it's whatever you want. But it's, you know, this is a thing. Did you ever see The Abyss?
Yeah.
So remember that awesome pink shit that they breathe?
What was the liquid oxygen, basically?
Yeah,
right?
Liquid oxygen. And it's like there's two things humans can't do. There's two things, well, many things we can't do, but in the elements, we're separated from the sky unless we want to be in a plane, and we're separated from the ocean unless we want to have scuba tanks on. Mm-hmm. Those are the two things we can't do.
Right.
And so there are these two essential freedoms that have been removed from us just by nature. But the idea of one day being able to go down to the beach
and just hop in,
inject yourself with a kind of like Ray Kurzweil white blood cell thing and right. just swim in and be like, guys, I'm just going to swim out as far as I can go and you're going to be fine unless you get eaten by a shark or something.
Yeah.
You can just swim. Can you imagine the freedom to be able to like just swim down into the ocean? When you get tired, you're not going to drown. You just float underneath the sea, breathing the water. Maybe you're just floating out there. You've got a kind of like, you know, I don't know, probably a spear gun or some kind of weapon to protect you from the occasional great white that might come.
I don't think they'd want to have anything to do with you, though. They'd be like, what the fuck is that weird trash?
They'd just be like, great. There goes the neighborhood.
Oh, God, they figured it out.
The monkeys are coming back.
Oh, God, they figured it out. God damn it.
Yeah, because, you know, there would be, like, if that could happen, if we could figure out a way to breathe underwater, clearly the next thing that would happen is people would just start living down there. You'd find caves and you'd just live down there if you didn't have to.
I would. I live down there. I like seaweeds. Pretty good taste.
Yeah, you can just eat fish.
You want to brush your teeth ever?
You never have to brush your teeth.
You never have to brush your teeth.
No such thing as bad breath under the ocean.
Hey, we're down here now. I ain't got a brush no more. Oh, it's just, it's all water.
But you can't drink beer down here, Jerry.
Oh, we got to, somebody figures out, I tell you what, I'll go down there. When somebody figures out how to get a six pack in me.
I ain't going to become one of those underwater sea people until they learn how to get beer into my fucking stomach under the sea.
I ain't being one of those motherfucking underwater sea people. Suck on my jack.
Suck my dick, sea creeps.
I'll take a jackhammer down there and show you where Atlantis is right between my legs.
Y'all can fuck off. But that's the thing, man. Like, if suddenly the ability happened, this is the thing. Like, you know, so many people are trapped in whatever their country they're living in. Right. Like, for example, the Gaza Strip. These people are trapped in the Gaza Strip. But if suddenly they learn to breathe underwater. And they're just like, well, see you guys later. Yeah. I think they just go under the ocean and people would never see them again.
I think they would, but wouldn't other people go there with them? It'd be like a real log jam, wouldn't there?
Well, there's so much space down there. I mean,
there's a lot of space.
There's so much space. Like, there would be like whole new countries of undersea people that emerge.
That could be right now.
Oh, I love thinking about that.
Coast to coast, yeah.
Do they talk about aquatic cities?
I think they have an Atlantis episode about once a month just to check in. All right, how's Atlantis doing? Is it still doing pretty good? Caller, we heard that you found Atlantis. Is this true? Off the coast of Coral Gables, Florida?
the Atlantis theory actually is not my favorite theory when it comes to hidden worlds within our world, but Hollow Earth theory, to me, is one of the greatest, coolest conspiracy theories of all time.
I don't think I really know it, no.
So Hollow Earth theory And for listeners out there, this is why I wish we're going to go live soon, and eventually you guys will be able to call in and
it's gonna be great.
Correct us. But Hollow Earth theory is the idea that within that Earth is just a shell, and that floating in the center of the Earth is another Earth, and that this Earth is called Shangri-La. This is Shangri-La. And there's these cool stories. Like, a lot of people, Hollow Earth theory really caught on at one point, and people started thinking that in the Arctic, in the North Pole, in the poles, there was like these
portals. There's doors, basically.
That lead into this place where there's mammoths still. And there's all these prehistoric animals that went into the Earth somehow. There's a famous story of a Nazi submarine commander who says that he went into an underwater cave and emerged into this place with these super intelligent people. They had a weird name for themselves, too, like a really ominous name, like the Happy People or something spooky. Like, you wouldn't think people who lived in a cave would call themselves
the Jimmies.
Yeah, something like that. But the same report that he said the same thing. There's mammoths down there, and that and that it's a paradise. It's a beautiful, beautiful paradise. And it's also, people who believe in Hollow Earth theory say that the idea of Hades, hell, the notion of an underworld, all comes from an ancient primordial understanding that just underneath us, an entire other planet existed filled with gods.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it myself, but...
And that's the idea that that's where the gray aliens come from.
The grays?
Yeah.
The grays come from the Earth.
That spaceships are actually rising up out of the ocean, and they're not coming from space.
I've never heard that. I don't know how I've never heard that one before.
Oh, it's a good one.
It seems like all those places where there's like the ultimate paradise world, I always feel like a little suspect. You know what I mean? When it's something that's... It sounds like the whole sounds too good to be true, probably is kind of thing, especially with the other worlds.
Well, I mean, I think the reason it activates something inside of me is that it's the dream of an escape from modern day society.
Well, that's always been the idea. I think anytime anyone talks about that stuff throughout history, that's the idea. It's a form of escapism.
And you used to be able to do that. That's what it was like before we knew what the Earth was. You get on a boat, you say goodbye to your friends.
Right, it meant something.
You land on another continent, and there's people that you've never seen before.
And they've never seen you.
They've never
seen you.
You're trading strange things with them.
And you truly have no common ground, really, except the fact that you're maybe both humanoids.
The only common ground is that your bacteria are killing them. Or whatever is on top of you is killing them. And that's one of the great... what you're hearing there, friends, is a new addition to my household. That's my sweet little Gatsby. He's a puppy. He's my girlfriend's darling little pup.
He loves to make sounds.
And he has the most high-pitched shriek. That's actually in... that's what veterinarians call a kick and bark.
Really?
I'm just kidding. Listen to that. That thing could shatter wine glasses.
Oh my god, it's terrible.
It's like a sonic X-ray weapon. He's barking at my bike. For some reason, he's looking at the bike, barking at it. By the way, not to get off course here, because I think we are getting to an interesting place, but is there, in the list of creepy things...
Right.
Outside of seeing a ghost, actually, or looking out the window and seeing a guy wearing glasses staring in.
Why glasses?
I don't know. Just something about a spectacled voyeur is creepier than a non-spectacled voyeur. I don't know why. But the in the list of creepy things, what's more creepy than when your dog decides to start barking
at
a wall?
Yeah, it's creepy. Or when their hackles go up and they're looking at nothing. So it's like... there's nothing fucking there at all.
I have on video.
Oh, this is... I heard about this.
Fox. I had a picture of my mom in my office, sitting on a chair. Beautiful picture. The Bennett at Sure Design T-Shirts in Thailand had this beautiful picture drawn for me. It's all these pictures of my mom. I placed it up in my office. I'm sitting there with Fox. I'm typing on my computer. He starts looking at that picture. And the same thing you were saying, his hackles go up. Right. He starts growling, whimpering, barking, seems afraid, is backing up.
Right.
Oh, God. Shit, that scared the hell out of me. Even if it was theoretically the ghost of my mom, it's still scary.
Didn't it happen at a significant time as well, or no?
I don't remember. I don't think it was a significant time.
I thought it was
time.
Like a thing where...
He's lost his toy. Listen, we've gotten off track. I want to get back to this.
Back
we're,
to these...
What we're talking about... Hold on, I'm going to... Let me just... Let's
put a
pause.
Filter,
gonna,
put a dog filter
I'm gonna put
on
the
there.
Dog, I'm going to put the dog to sleep. Hang on. God, I love that dog.
Oh, what
annoying
a
as hell, but I
God,
love him.
So sweet.
Now... to get back to this thing, which is that what's been taken away from humans, which has been one of the way bees gather honey or the way mm-hmm. that birds build nests, is that humans have always been migratory explorers who have stretched out from Africa and moved around the whole world. And there was this element of doing that that had within it discovery. Not, I know what's going to be there.
So
not, I've looked at Google images of it. Not, I know exactly every single thing to expect from this place. But you would literally go into a place that no one alive from your genetic line had ever seen.
You're basically committing yourself to possible death. You're being
yes.
like, I'm going to go into the abyss. I'm going to the unknown. This might be the it. This might be the end. But and that's why you do it, is because you don't... That's why people love to fucking travel. Like, people will never not like to travel, because that's a much smaller thing, but you can't really... It's very few places you can go now that are actually a place where you're... I don't know if you can go anywhere, really, except there's a few isolated places, right?
The odds are that if you're a human being living today, you will never, ever step foot on a place... where no humans have ventured. That's the odds. Mm-hmm. Now, that's been that way for a very long time. If you're a subscriber to Graham Hancock's theory, he might say, well, that's been the way it's been since for countless multiple apocalypses where the human biomass spreads around the planet, meteors hit, diseases strike, climate change happens, and the thing dies off and starts again from tiny little
spores.
Clusters. Tiny little spores, yeah. But still, that kind of like rediscovery of a place that was once inhabited by the ancestors, even that would be a rush, you know? But there is a something dismaying about going to a place populated with tourists. Like when I went up to, when we went up to Arizona, Utah, it was...
Zion
National Park in Utah.
It's very popular.
There's this beautiful river that runs through a canyon.
The Virgin River.
That you can hike
That's
through.
That's a special river.
Oh, but when you're hiking up this river, when you go to Zion National Park and you've been taken up in a tram and they've dropped you off and you go down into the river, you are exactly in the same company that you would find at the Glendale Galleria.
Yeah, that's the case with some of those places. Well, when I went camping last time, I had the opposite experience because my friend Patrick, who I've had on my podcast a bunch of times,
he's
like this expert.
Let's talk about that, because this is, you sent me pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Of this place that you went to out in the middle of fucking nowhere.
It was scary.
How did this start? Like, how do you, this is something I've been wanting to do, is go on a nice camping trip.
Right.
And I think so many people kind of bat around in their heads, man, we should go on a camping trip, but you mm-hmm. never do it. How did you get your shit together enough to actually go out into a beautiful wilderness?
Well, it wasn't my shit together so much as just as Patrick.
Who's Patrick?
Patrick Glenn is a friend of mine from Minnesota, and he works for the USGS, and he does these jobs for about 5 months at a time in different locations where he counts certain species. Like he's counting right now. He's counting this certain type of alpine frog that lives in these high elevation lakes. He has to count them, and he goes out there on these really aggressive, like 3 or 4 day hikes where he has to go into these
aggressive.
He climbs a 14,000 foot peak to go up to these remote locations that no one can get to.
Wow!
Because they have to do a sampling of the area, like a random sampling, to see where these animals are. So he's backpack extremo. So basically, he's a guide, and he guided us up to this one of many places you can go to that are, there's no evidence of any human beings being there whatsoever. You're up there, and it looks like fucking Narnia or something.
How far is the hike up there?
It's not that. That's the thing. It's not very far at all. It was a day hike for that. When I see that picture, it was just a day hike. And we got caught in a vicious thunderstorm. Thought we were going to fucking die up there. We were off the trail at about 11,000 feet. And we got hit by three waves of lightning and thunder and hail.
Mm.
And then we got, after that cleared out, dropped down to like 20 degrees cooler than it was. It was really cold. And we get up there in this pristine alpine lake. It was something. It was one of those things where I really felt like I was on a psychedelic drug. I felt like I had taken mushrooms, because it was something where everything I looked at, because the way the light was filtering through the clouds and how it was later in the day, so it was like that sort of evening light, it just looked, everything looked, you can't describe it. It's one of those things where...
Try.
Remember that part in Contact, the movie Contact?
Yes.
Where Jodie Foster, when she's traveling through space, she says, I wish they had sent a poet.
Ah, yeah.
That's how I felt, because I don't have the skill to describe what I'm seeing, because it's just, I feel like I'm being enveloped by it, just utter beauty, and I was completely sober and exhausted, and just made it through these, like, been climbing for hours, and it was something where I've never felt so exhausted but so energetic at the same time.
Sometimes I wonder if my inability to describe beauty is not so much related to a lack of skill as much as a kind of fear of really bearing my heart. Because
really?
Yeah, because when you're in like that kind of beauty, the words that come to you aren't going to be words, aren't like popular words that people are going to want to hear. They're
right.
Like, I want to weep. It feels like this is the mother.
Yeah,
I felt
like crying, actually. I really did. And partially was because I was so exhausted and just slipped on a log and cracked my shin open and was bleeding and stuff. But at the same time, it was something where it doesn't, like, to even try to describe with words, it's not the point, because it's something where it's the experience, and it's the thing where if I went there tomorrow, if I went there even 5 hours after I was there for the first time, it would not be the same, because it's always changing. And that moment existed for that one, for a brief period of time, and it will never happen again.
Well,
I think that's what I liked about it so much, is it felt really precious in that sense.
You're returning to the life matrix that all things originated from. You're returning to like the what used to be. You know, this is if you read Walden. Have you ever read Walden?
Oh yeah.
So there's this. It's a beautiful book, but it's kind of a mournful book. You know, it's lamenting the inevitable encroachment of human society into the world and the gradual extinction of spaces like what you're talking about.
Spaces that are precious, that are untouched and haven't been raped.
And the primal experience that is available there, or the kind of like, you know, it's a language. When you go into nature, you know right away, if you give yourself a little time to be still, that you're being spoken to, but you don't quite understand the language.
Yeah.
But you know it's talking to you, and the way the birds move through the sky, the reflection of the light on the water, the feeling of the breeze against your face, the sense of vast openness in your heart where this door swings open and you feel like you have suddenly become the super dome where they have like football games, like your heart is suddenly transformed into like an empty,
it's so big,
huge, spacious thing, because you're blending into the expansiveness of nature that you're in, and the nature, and it's welcoming you in some odd way. It's like having this chat with you, but we forgot that fucking language. That's the language that your friend probably speaks, that language a little bit,
or probably
indigenous people can speak that language. I think shamans probably speak that language a little bit.
It's about stillness, and I think that's a big thing. I mean, there's some quote I just saw from Ram Dass just the other day, and he talks about that all the time, just about how quietness and how the things that come to you when you're still and quiet and listening and watching, as opposed to the other way around. If you're trying to find it and try searching and making effort, versus just allowing the situation to, just letting it be.
Yeah, and theoretically, the communication will come to you regardless of your surroundings, mm-hmm. if you can still yourself enough. But it seems like certain places are more conducive.
Yeah, they bring it out. They help you. That's like a little kick in the pants to help you to get to that place, as opposed to, like, some people, I've known people who can meditate, like, how you're meditating on a subway car, you're meditating like in this office where everyone's fucking chattering. Some people can do that, but I can't do that.
And you know, the meditation is a fantastic vehicle, but it's the, however you get to that space, that just that moment of, it's not just the moment of, what we're talking about here is the moment of, you hear a song that you've heard a million times for the first time.
Right.
You go into nature and are reminded of this thing that you've always known was there, but you completely lost touch with it. Like running into an old friend that you haven't seen for years, and you just start right at the very place that you left off. It's the exact same sense of, like, sustenance. You're mm-hmm. eating. You haven't been eating.
Yeah, it's feels really good. It's definitely sustaining. It's like there's a lot of substance to it. There's some guy, that guy who wrote that book, The War of Art, talks about how he had a dream, I think when he was meditating or something, about how when a bird's flying, it's not scared it's going to fall out of the air because the air is thick. It's thick mm-hmm. to a bird. It's not something where you have to, you're like, you're going to fall through.
That's cool.
It's, you can feel when an eagle flaps its wings, it feels like this, the air is thick with stuff. With
energy waves.
Yeah, energy. It's something there. It's not empty. And he talks about that's the same as you can, I mean, I'm not sure how you make that an analogy, but it's the same sort of thing where in nothingness, there's everything, even though it seems like it's the opposite.
This is that high that the astronauts talk about when they get into space for the first time and look down at the Earth, and suddenly you're filled with this inexpressible sense of awe at this living, spinning, beautiful egg floating mm-hmm. in the vastness of space. I think it's because I think even when you're in space, you realize that this thing that you're talking about, the invisible energy of life, is there in the vacuum of space too.
Yeah.
And then you start realizing that, oh God, this thing that I'm in is big. It's so
it's gigantic. It's incomprehensibly massive.
And when I think probably that sense of like leaving the atmosphere mm-hmm. of the planet and recognizing that this like exhalation or inhalation that seems to be producing planets and black holes doesn't stop when you leave the planet, but it just continues, and then it's, you know, it's full of stars.
Oh my God, we've got some stars up here. 1, 2, 3, we can't count them.
Yeah, but God damn it, man, I would so love to drink a beer under the ocean. That would be so...
That'd be awesome to funnel one, to funnel a beer 10,000 feet under.
To experience that freedom. I mean, that's what we need. It feels like that would be such a cure for so many things that seem to be ailing our poor, pitiful, brainwashed, superstitious species. Is a new place to explore, a new place to go to where you could just keep walking in one direction and never run into another person. Mm-hmm. God, that'd be great.
There are places like that, though. There's a lot of them in California.
Yeah, but they don't have internet.
That's the problem, yeah.
You can't Instagram it, man.
If you can't gram it, it didn't happen. No gram it.
No gramming in space. Did you hear about this new magnetic engine or microwave
this.
Engine?
Tell me about it. Tell me more.
So there's this... I'll actually, you know, I'll look it up so that I don't completely butcher it. I'm always butchering everything.
Okay, so like, you know how magnets, they want to go other directions from the magnet that's the other kind of magnet?
Yeah.
If you did that, what if you put those on a car and put them on everybody's bumper? It's like that. That way you can drive around nobody getting in an accident. Wouldn't that be good?
So this is This is from, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Didn't mean to cut off what?
10 questions about NASA's impossible space drive answered. This is from Wired UK. And this says, let's find
out. Isn't such a tiny force likely to be an error?
Okay, this is called an M drive, an EM drive. And basically what it is...
electromagnetic drive?
Yes. They have figured out a way to run microwaves inside some kind of vacuum space, and it creates thrust. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand why. And so what's when you're traveling through space currently, the big problem is you've got to... like, if you want to go to Mars and come back...
you need a lot of energy.
You need a lot of fuel.
Right.
And that's heavy. And so to carry fuel to... So that means that...
There's a math coefficient there where it's like, at some point, the fuel becomes... you can't have enough fuel to carry the fuel you need to carry the fuel.
That's it.
Yeah.
So this fixes that problem, because without the fuel, using microwave energy, it creates thrust. And in space, you only need the minimal amount of thrust, because if you keep applying a consistent state of thrust
in
space, there's no drag. And so you will accelerate over time. You will begin to accelerate really, really, really fast.
Right.
They say that with this new drive, we can get to Mars in 4 weeks, 3 weeks.
Holy shit.
We can get to Mars in 4 weeks.
Wait, how fast are you traveling then?
Well, let's see. I'll read this. This is from question five. This is 10 questions about NASA's new drive. Question five. Even if it works, how can such a small thrust push a spacecraft? The NASA paper says the expected thrust to power for initial flight applications is expected to be in the 0.4 Newton per kilowatt range. I don't know what that means, which is about 7 times higher than the current state-of-the-art Hall thruster in use on orbit today. How does this get us to Mars? The small but steady push of the EM drive is a winner for space missions, gradually accelerating spacecraft to high speed. The NASA paper projects a conservative manned mission to Mars from Earth orbit with a 90-ton spacecraft. Driven by the new technology using a 2-megawatt nuclear power source, it can develop 800 newtons of thrust. The entire mission would take 8 months, including a 70-day stay on Mars.
Jesus.
Yes! So that is so intense, man. That is such an intense thing that just happened. It's been around for a while, but, you know, it takes people time to test it. To test this stuff out, but... that's very exciting to think that just now they're discovering a way. If you can get to Mars in 2 months, that means that we could easily...
that's a very short amount of time.
That's a short amount of time,
that's like,
man.
Basically, that's not any time, really, in terms of human time.
Yeah. That's an amazing thing to imagine that instead of like... because if it takes you a year or half a year, or however long, just to get a tiny little rover up there... the amount of time it would take to colonize Mars is is generations.
Right.
But they say with this thing, we could get to the nearest galaxy within 30 years.
So that means that all the elites will be able to have a place they can live once Earth is popularized, completely filled up, and we can, all the elites can jettison to start the Martian colony, and the Earth will be left to people with low credit scores.
ISIS.
Yeah, ISIS and low credit scores. It'll be two countries.
The Earth will just be like a bunch of fanatics with low credit scores.
A bunch of caliphates.
That's some scary shit, huh?
I think that's going to happen, too. I think my theory is that, you know, like more and more things have a reach. A credit card has become more integral into more and more things.
Yes.
It's become a thing where... there's certain things you can't do unless you have a credit card.
Absolutely.
And more people have credit cards. It's going to be...
can't buy food on a plane.
It's going to come to the point where you have to have a credit card to do things. And if you can't get a credit card, it's a further separation between lower class and higher class. It's like a crowbar that's sectioning off people to where there's basically two types. There's two classes. You're either in the credit class where you're... upper class, credit class, and the low, like the untouchables.
666, the number of the beast. I have spent the last 2 or 3 years working on my credit score because I wrecked my credit
right.
when I was a comedian. When I was, I guess I still am, but when I was like a broke comedian, I was like, you know, using credit to buy things I couldn't afford like an idiot. And I wrecked my credit. And I finally got it good. My credit is good. Like, I finally achieved a good credit, and I experienced that honky pride.
Oh, it is a pride. It's a special pride. My credit score, I didn't even know it, but when I moved...
What are you at?
It's something... It's like the highest you can
have.
What
do you have?
I'm not sure. I think it's like 1680.
You don't get that high. Credit doesn't get that high. It gets
maybe
up
I'm thinking
like,
of something else, but whatever it is, it's...
You're thinking about your IQ.
Yeah. I don't even know. They just gave me a number, told me to turn around and walk out.
No, you're right, Johnny. And it's
but it's gross. It doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless.
But it also, aside from the fact that like having this certain number, it does mean something. It actually does mean something.
Well, it does mean something. But I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's a number that's being used to assign people. It's
a way to tell.
It's a bad
that
thing.
Here's what it is. It's a way to tell if I loan money to you,
mm-hmm.
I will have a return on my investment for sure. That's all right. It is. It's like turning people into stocks. It's like, here's your credit score is basically represents how volatile your stock as a human being is for a guy who wants to make money off the interest he'll accrue off of loaning you money. So if you've got a high credit score, then for someone who has shit tons of money, and when people have shit tons of money, one thing they quickly realize is that, oh, if I just pour this money in the right places, that money turns into more money.
Right.
I don't have to work. I don't have to do mm-hmm. anything. Just put the money in the right place. The money will grow more money, and I will continue to like get super rich. So
mega rich.
And that's what a credit score is. A good credit score is so that a reptilian, as he's flipping through his catalog, will come to you and be like, oh, wonderful. Give that man a car.
But it's also the opposite, though, because if people who have lower credit scores, people who have worse credit, they're more likely to get credit cards because it's the whole predatory lending thing still going on with credit cards. If they don't want me to have a credit card because I fucking pay my bill every month, I don't make them any money. Because I make the money when I charge something because they get a piece of it
yeah,
through
you
that
make,
transaction
you make the money.
Fee. But they make a lot more money off a person who defaults on their payments and has to pay penalties and get charged interest. It's all this stuff where they're preying on people. They're preying on people who can't afford the product that they're selling.
They like it all, man. And
I love it.
Did you
they
hear?
They love it. It's only getting worse, too. It's getting with car loans.
And you've heard how they've changed.
Everything you can possibly do.
Have you seen the way they've changed the way you're computing credit scores?
I have no idea.
So now they're... So this is the news, is that they are changing the way that they... Right? Okay, so currently if you have unpaid... Like if you go 90 days or however long without paying a credit
delinquent.
Card... You're delinquent. That will knock your credit score down by 5 or 10 points, mm-hmm. depending. And so what they're doing now is they're making it so that if you have taken care of your debt, whatever it is, if you've paid it off, they will no longer mark your credit score for 5 years. So everybody's credit score is about to go up. Now, the reason they did that...
It's got to be devious.
But it's devious. Here's my theory about why they did that. Because what happens is, if you're somebody who's got shitty credit, and you owe $20,000 or $10,000 or whatever it is to a credit card company, you go into a place of absolute hopelessness, and you just say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to get a new phone number. They can fuck off. They'll never find me. I'm never going to pay it. I'll just live off of cash and figure out a way to survive on phones that I buy with those prepaid cards you can get at Best Buy. That's what happens. They don't even attempt to pay off the debt. So in a way, it like... I think the credit card companies have recognized that that's actually more harmful mm-hmm. to getting the debt paid off. So by saying, listen, if you guys just start doing minimum payments,
right.
we're going to up your credit score, and then all this money will come flooding back in from people
yeah.
who decide to start trying to pay off their debt. So that's credit news from the Duncan Trust Family Hour Podcast.
The credit news. Experian. You want to check your credit score? Go to fucking Experian. Hey, man, what's up? Are you going to go rafting? No, I'm going to check out Experian.
But don't forget that it's not just that, you know, having good credit is going to give you access to more and more services, but it's also going to...
You sound like a fucking reptilian right
it's
now.
It's also...
Access to services?
Yeah, it is. That's what it does.
Access to services. Wait, concierge program.
Just listen, I'm about to sound like a
free
real
tickets.
Reptilian. Here comes the real reptilian.
Hey, Jay-Z and Madonna are playing this week. You want some tickets?
A higher credit score will give you the ability to take out medical loans, which will allow you to replace your white blood cells. cells with new white blood cells, increasing your lifespan by 100 years. Do you really want to die when you're 80? Enjoy this beautiful world. Take out a medical loan and live to be 300.
Experian.
Yeah, Experian is going to let you live to be 300. I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to deny you this medical loan. We went through your credit card, your credit records. You only have a 640 credit score.
Sorry.
So sorry. We won't be able to replace your blood today.
But I'm going to die without the blood. I'm sorry. We need you to move on. Derek, will you please show Miss Swanson out to the waiting zone?
It's going to be like people, like, you know how, like, you see, like, car commercials, which are the funniest fucking things ever. Yeah. Because all a car is a fishing lure the bank is using to get a dumb person to get into debt.
It's terrible. It's gotten worse. It's getting worse every day.
But whenever you see a car commercial or you see a
that's a great analogy.
It's the exact same thing
it's
that
a fishing lure.
They throw in front of the fish.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like
shiny.
It's like
moving.
Yeah, it's moving. And what goes along with a package of a car commercial? It's never just a car. They never just show a car. Four wheels, great radio. Here's the engine. It's a lifestyle. You're always in there with that young family. You're starting your family. You're with your beautiful wife.
She's ambiguously ethnic and has perfect cleavage.
Ambiguously ethnic, and God, she's so happy, and you're so happy. And this
is that
it.
A Vampire Weekend concert at Trader Joe's happening?
The doors are opening to your new married life with your beautiful wife and your beautiful car that you're going to drive your baby around in.
This is the day.
Da-da-da.
Well, this is the day that you're looking for. It's right now, right here in a Nissan.
Making it happen. You're a man. Opening doors wherever you can.
Opening these doors and stepping into a Nissan tonight, baby.
Safe and fun and hip. And so it's a fishing lure, but you're going to see commercials in the future where it's like a family at a medical loan building where it's like, they accepted our loan. We're going to live to be 300. Mm-hmm. Where you're sitting with your daughter at the table and you're like, good news, honey. We had our white blood cells replaced today. Mm-hmm. And mommy and daddy are going to live to be 300.
Great.
Medical loans. You're going to live to be 300. We can make the payment on a 300-year loan solo. Yes, it's $500 million for this treatment, but over the course of 300 years,
You
can't afford not to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to start. Because you've already got the fact that there's a commercials right now for Experian. There's a commercial. Like, what are they selling? They're not selling anything. There's a commercial. You see commercials for oil companies now. Like, commercials that are goodwill campaigns for oil companies.
Yeah, those are always curious to me. Mm-hmm. Like, those are just PR campaigns because they have so much money. They're just like, yeah, let's just do some PR work.
Hate us less.
But the Experian commercial and the credit commercials and the free credit report commercials and all of those commercials are a kind of propaganda designed to enforce the notion that what makes a person good or functional is not their ethics or morals, but their ability to repay debt and their ability to have like a disciplined spending habits.
There's a really, really great funny book. Maybe we talked about it before. We talked about this before. A super sad true love story. God, I think it's by Gary Shinehart.
I don't think so.
It's so fucking funny. It's funny like Grand Theft Auto is funny, but it's also about sort of near future in New York City where credit is the most important thing and longevity. It's based on like Kurzweil and based on Aubrey de Grey's idea of like living forever through special chemicals and stuff. It's such a funny book. It's hilarious, but it's also kind of scary because everything he writes about seems so plausible and so capable of becoming an actual thing in the near future, like in our lifetime. The idea of like credit, these polls you walk by that project your credit score when you walk by.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, man, death is bedtime for humans in the same way when it's time for the baby to go to bed at 7, the parents come in and put the baby to bed. And in the same way, as humans evolve and as our species continues to be on the planet, it makes sense that our bedtime is being extended as we we get older. We're getting a extra hours to watch late night TV.
Mm-hmm.
And And eventually it does make sense that once the human species goes from its teen years into adulthood, the curfew will be completely lifted and going to sleep will no longer be a requisite, but an option where you decide that you've had enough of this particular node of the simulator and you're ready to go back into oblivion. That's going to happen for sure, man. Right. And definitely the division is going to be a socioeconomic division.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for sure.
It's already happening. It's going to get more extreme. Like, H.G. Wells' book, Time Machine? That makes more and more sense. The idea that there's two classes and the elites are basically idiots living above ground, just dining on fruit and living in waterfalls where they have like this slave class of underlings under the ground.
Well,
it's obviously heavily exaggerated.
But becomes more awful because humans will become less than slaves in the sense that it will be so
inefficient. It won't be slaves. It would be nothing.
So inefficient to have a slave when you have the new IBM made Android with downloadable updates where you can teach the thing to like host a Scrabble game or.
Yeah, it's worse than a slave. Because people become like nothing more than their flesh, even.
Irrelevant. Yeah. They become basically.
Dog food.
Irrelevant. Well,
maybe dog food.
They become
best dog food.
They become not the physical labor becomes something that is
unnecessary. It's not valuable.
It's no longer valuable, but there will be worth. There will be things that have value. It just won't be the ability to haul boxes all day long. It's going to be other things.
Like cachet.
Yeah.
And hair swirl.
Yeah, it's going to be, they call it a new renaissance. It's a kind of like dystopian renaissance that we're looking at where modes of self-expression become the what's valuable. Your ability to articulate yourself in creative ways or to create novelty in the world and invent things and bring things into the world that will become incredibly valuable, I think.
Podcasts.
Podcasts are a part of it for sure. Yeah, man. Podcasts.
Backflips, being able to do a successful backflip, landing it, sticking the landing on a backflip, being able to,
the whole moral of a hard day's work, you know, that whole ethic or what's called slave morality, which is, you will often hear people, diss somebody, you know, the older people especially will diss.
I'm not working hard there.
Haven't done a hard day's work in this entire life. Well, let me see your hands.
Let me see your hands there, boy. Oh, looks like you got some hands fit to. You couldn't open up an orange with those hands there.
When I look at your hands, I feel like I'm looking at mayonnaise spread on a bun, boy.
What is that, 5 pieces of a pussy?
By the time I was your age, my hands were bloody, leathery, scarred stumps.
I had stump pumpers that were the size of a flash welder.
Stump pumpers?
Are you kidding me? I could cut open a jar with my thumbnail. I cut open 2 jars and I had to cut it open for Mama because she lost all of her hands trying to do the same thing I did to do for her. We used to make charcoal in the backyard and we were happy.
I used your mother's clitoris to make charcoal.
We used to take that clit and heat it up good and hot, get it red hot and flick it.
That's a
till it spray.
But that was always the mark of a good person is that they spend hours and hours a day sweating and laboring not for their own lives but for some boss.
Yeah.
And this kind of morality is evil and is just as bad as the notion of credit scores. It's just the same thing, really, which is that
toil.
There is placed in the mind of so many people the notion that what is most important in life is to toil day after day for a boss who you are making money for and are not being fairly compensated, and that is considered to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
That's not normal.
Yeah.
That's not normal. So if that starts falling apart, it's like, it's not that so much humans are no longer valuable, it's that humans are no longer laborers. Humans go from being the value of a human is no longer represented by their ability to make money for a person that is exploiting them, but the value of a human transforms into their ability to spread love, happiness, joy, and novelty, mm-hmm. and to be creative. That's a person's value.
The big problem, though, is just a lot of people. And a lot of people don't get that and won't get that. And people like that tend to cause more problems for other people. It's like a negativity infection that happens. And that's why you have anything that's negative is just the spread of negativity through contact, through like osmosis.
That's damn right. You know, this is something where unfortunately they don't have it, but they need it, which is the CNC, Centers for Negativity Control, which
that'll be great.
Marks the spread of negative memes as they go pouring through society that is able to track in the same way. They're like, oh shit, there's an Ebola outbreak in Rwanda. They could say, oh, holy shit, there's an outbreak of jaded hipsters who are angry at George Carlin.
Who's angry at George Carlin? Oh, that'd be funny.
No, but there are so many of like, you know what I'm saying, man? Yeah. There's an inevitable, there'll be a fashionable attitude that breaks out where all of a sudden we all find ourselves plagued with the awful, I hate Justin Bieber disease.
Or just caring at all about something like that. Caring about something like so insignificant and dumb. It's almost not even negativity because it's even worse. It's like this neutral sort of just grayness of
worried about ISIS,
worried about a thing that has no relevance in my life whatsoever.
Yeah, and that is as much a kind of flu or disease as mm-hmm. anything else, and it's just as contagious. And so often when you find yourself sitting with someone and suddenly the words coming out of your mouth as you're watching them emerge, you'll realize that these are words that don't paint the picture of us being the very tip of a genetic tree that has its roots in the Big Bang. But rather, you'll find that the story that you're telling people is a ghost story of some sorts about how we exist on a deteriorating planet where our only hope is to increase our credit score so that we can live longer.
Live for the now.
And then you'll look down at your body and you'll look down at your life and you'll look down at the fact that you've got nipples and are capable of orgasms and that inevitably you have friends around you. And if you don't have friends around you, you can essentially go wherever you want and that no matter what, you can always escape from this terrible dimension and you're just a few pills away from infinity. And then suddenly you realize that you are actually in heaven.
Yeah.
And that's what the Centers for Negativity Control would do, you know?
They would explain it to you, like, point blank, to make you understand that it's exactly, that you're here right now. It's great. It's good. Here's a B12 shot. And
B12, yeah, exactly. Are they in the same way like the CDC sends people into the fucking Rwanda at the risk of like getting mm-hmm. Ebola to treat Ebola? In the same way, CNC would send super trained people into the most negative situations, into the darkest, most backwards hipster bars, and the creepiest clusters of art stars,
wearing like all orange. Yeah. With like funky shoes and a smile.
No, not maybe not even so overt. Maybe these are like trained ninjas.
Oh, they're positivity ninjas.
Yeah, they're the people who like when you get around them, they're the people where you can be in the most miserable mood of your life,
right.
But you're around them for just a few seconds, and suddenly the story that they're telling is one of infinite potential as a human being mm-hmm. to do anything that you want in this incarnation, and they're able to express that in a way that is inarguable and undeniable by pointing out the fact that your very existence is a lottery win as far as the great span of the universe goes, and somehow they just say it in a way you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, and they make you, oh, you can do whatever you want.
Oh, yeah, you're not chained. You know, you're not really stuck in that relationship or job, or you're not really trapped by whatever you think your disability is.
That money doesn't exist?
Yeah, there's no such thing as credit, friend.
Did you know that doesn't exist?
Yeah. Yeah, did you know that at your very core there is a fountain of infinite love that you can connect to at any moment and experience orgasmic Buddha-level bliss at any time that you want? And I feel it right now because I figured out how to do it.
Did you know
shit.
There's...
more bacteria in yogurt than there is money in the world? This spoonful of sheep's milk yogurt has more bacteria than there is money.
And people would be running away from the CNC. Just like in Rwanda, yeah, with Ebola. They'd be like, those people are fucking assholes, man. If you get around them too long, you won't be able to write jokes anymore. You start getting nice to everybody. You start feeling terrible for talking shit about people. They ruin your ability to be an asshole, man. Don't get around them.
Well, unhappiness is easy. It's easy to be negative. It's the well-traveled path. It's downhill. It's easy to do.
And every once in
a
while.
Easy. I've been bad lately.
No, you've been good, man.
Personally. Like, I find myself getting irritable, like, at the dumbest things. And that's what that is. That's just that little thorn of, like, me wanting to machete the guy whose fucking truck honked at 9 in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
It's that. It's terrible, but...
Yeah. Well, you know, it reminds me of this amazing story that Ram Dass tells about the time that he got a phone call from a woman freaking out on acid who thought she was going insane. And she was like talking to Ram Dass. She's like, I'm on acid. I've lost my mind. I've gone completely insane. I'm losing it. And he's like, okay, well, let me talk to the person who dialed the phone and who knew to call me,
mm-hmm,
because that person sounds like they're just fine. You sound completely out of your mind. But it's like when you so you have this function of these two states of being that are happening at any given time inside of you. And for me, there's the selfish ego Duncan game, which is, that's what they call it. It's a game. You're playing the game of the self. So you're playing the Johnny game, the Johnny Pemberton game. And it's the people you like. It's the people you don't like. It's the things you consider success. It's the things you consider failure. That's the game you're playing. Mm-hmm. And then the whole time that you're playing that game, there's this other side that's watching you play the game. And that's that still silent or still small voice that just says, yeah, look, you're angry right now. It's not angry, that voice. And then if you experiment with it, you can suddenly find that you can jump from the Johnny game to that voice.
Right.
And now you're just that thing, whatever that is. And that's when that goddamn balloon effect happens, where you turn into a Super Bowl arena, where suddenly you, and they call it expansiveness, where mm-hmm, you're like,
you just woof, feel huge, and it feels great. I always feel that way after meditating. I feel like there's like I get at least a 30-minute little window there of pretty good pure positivity, to where I just want to be like some benevolent blanket and just cover the earth and, oh, hey.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think that people such as ourselves who think about and talk about this stuff a lot, it's because we're sort of plagued with darkness to some extent.
Plagued.
And that's always the case, I think, is that people who think about it and maybe seem like they are on top of it or dealing with that the most, it's because they have the biggest problem with it.
Yes, it's true.
Because I know I have to, if I don't get on top of it, I'll be consumed with it. I'll be consumed with the fucking crystal shard in my skull that's working toward my brainstem. I'm going to turn the world black.
Pandora's box, mm-hmm, man. Open that thing up and all the sorrows of the world flew into the hearts of men and women. But yeah, and I'm the same way.
Yeah.
And
you're a demon.
And at any given moment, I do have a demonic element to myself, as we all do. That's what Carl Jung called the shadow. And it's it's an inescapable thing. And the choice that you get as a human being is you either get to fully focus on that thing that you call yourself, the Johnny, the Duncan, whoever it is that you are, whatever your name is, you will quickly realize that you are the vast expanse of infinite time that has become fixated on the most minute and tiny infinitesimal portion of the great cosmic exhalation. And that is why you suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the same way that an elephant knows when this tiny little guy's riding on top of it and beating it with a bamboo stick, there's something inside the elephant that's like, I'm a fucking elephant. Yeah. I could get you off of me in 2 seconds and trample you into jello.
Right.
In the same way, in the deepest part of human beings, I believe that there is a fundamental part of ourselves that knows, I'm a universe. I'm a fucking universe. I am the great expanse of all things, and I am being ridden by an angry little bearded neurotic shithead right now.
Right. You're like you're a mushroom cap. You're just an extension of the great mycelial mat, which is aliens.
Absolutely, it's aliens, and aliens are it. And it's God too, you know, or it's whatever you want to call it. It's whatever you want to call it.
God is dog.
God is dead. And dog dead is life.
Dog is Jed.
And Jed is one of the great characters of TV history from Beverly Hillbillies.
I was thinking of Jed. Isn't Jed in Fallout or Jed in one of those video games?
How great would it be if this podcast was called Beverly Hillbillies Talk and it's like meant to always talk about the Beverly Hillbillies?
How did we get sidetracked?
It always gets sidetracked into talking about
how... We're going to talk about episode 103 where Marjorie falls in love with the banker.
You know what? I talked about... Eddie Pepitone talked about that in one of his podcasts. I accidentally regurgitated something from a podcast I did just now. My apologies, Eddie Pepitone. I don't know why I did that.
You're a thief.
I'm a podcast thief. Well, guys, we have got to wrap this up, so we are going to end it on a song that Johnny's been preparing for the last couple of weeks for this podcast.
It's a really good song.
Oh, and before we do Johnny's song, please, all of you out there, go to DuncanTrussell.com, look at our dates. I'm going on the road with sweet Johnny Pemberton here.
Hey!
And get those tickets in advance because they are moving really fast. And I'm not just saying that. They're actually moving quick. Just buy them in advance. I don't buy tickets in advance either. But when I don't buy tickets in advance sometimes...
You wish you had.
And that's a shitty thing. So just do it. Go online. It's not like they're even that expensive. It's really cheap tickets for this tour. Mm-hmm. Come see us do stand-up comedy. If you haven't seen the glorious Johnny Pemberton perform, then you're somebody who didn't get to experience watching Jesus walk across water because it's that beautiful and miraculous a thing. And sometimes unicorns actually come exploding out of interdimensional portals in the walls.
They're very small, but they smell so good. They smell like peppermint and eucalyptus.
Yeah, but some of them smell like diapers.
Also, but if you want to come see just me, I'll be in Wilmington a few days before We're at the Laughing Skull. That weekend at the Dead Crow in Wilmington, and at the Barcade in someplace else before that.
So, guys, go to these shows.
Please.
Come see us. Say hello. Let us hug you. Let us touch your sweet, sweet bodies and rub oil and jam all over your face. This is Johnny Pemberton with his track, Where Does the Crow Go?
Where does the crow go? Oh, David, your cast is blasting off of Cracker Jacks. Oh, sweet baby David, why? Oh, sweet baby David, your Cracker Jack cast got cast in gold thrown back. Oh, sweet baby David, your daddy's coming back with the knapsack. It's filled with the babies, heads lopped off from the villagers.
Ben and Jerry's favorite kind of ice cream.
Hated, hated. Ben and Jerry's favorite ice cream is made from sperm of a horse that you never will ride.
Without horse sperm, there'd be no horses. Why do you hate on the white, white horse sperm?
White horses, of course, let's get divorces. White horses, of course, let's get divorces. Oh, sweet baby David, David, your Cracker Jack cast fell off. Oh, David, your sweet Cracker Jack cast fell off. You have a bunch of scarab beetles that make up your diaper. Scarab beetles crawling on your body that eat the shit as it leaves your body. Your sweet baby David, sweet baby David,
sweet baby David,
sweet baby David.
Thanks for coming on, Johnny. Beautiful song.
Bye, Duncan.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Johnny Pemberton. Check out his podcast, Twisting the Wind. It's on Feral Audio, the podcast network, which I am on. And don't forget to go to HuluPlus.com/FamilyHour and sign up for a trial membership. Give it a shot. It works on everything. Apple TV, Xbox, you name it. You can stream Hulu Plus right into your TV. Let your TV enjoy a nice, warm stream of Hulu Plus all over its circuit boards. Go to HuluPlus.com/FamilyHour. And most importantly, love yourself, forgive yourself, and be sweet to those darlings around you. Don't put vinegar sponges in the mouth of people who are dead asleep in the world. Give them big, fat, juicy hugs. Hare Krishna. See you next week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.